Welcome to MoneyMD, where the money doctors are in the house. We're giving out prescriptions for better financial health and making smart decisions with your money. We give common sense solutions to your complex problems. And now, here are the doctors.
Well, Ryan, it's a great time of the year. May is always a fun month. And, you know, the cicadas this year are quite different. They're still chirping out there.
Yeah, this is like the most in the area since like 1850 or something like that.
Yeah, I drove through Saluda about a week ago, and it was an amazing. I thought something was wrong with my truck. I mean, it was like squeaking or something. And I rolled down the window, and it was exceptionally loud up there. I think there's like two different species that have hatched at the same time, which is super unusual. So. And vacation time, right around
yeah,
the
corner. Yeah, everyone's finishing up school.
Yeah.
My foster son's finishing up pre-K this week, and so nice. We're all transitioning nice. To vacation mode, and we're going to try to travel with him for the first time.
Good.
So
where are you going?
We'll be in Greenville for a wedding a couple weeks. That'll be his first time traveling with us, so
good.
Obviously
good.
We're a little nervous.
That's awesome.
And then the beach, obviously, we go every year.
Yeah.
Do that in June.
Nice. Yeah, we're going to the beach as well. Nice. That's an annual trip. Yeah, those are always great memories. We've been going down to Hilton Head for a very long time.
That's where we go every year, so yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah, very good. So, well, we have a great show lined up today. We have two really good topics. One of them is more relational in nature. I'll let you kind of introduce that.
Yeah, four mistakes couples make when discussing money. So we're going to talk a little bit more on the relational aspect of money and you know, just things to avoid, and we'll talk about our own experiences with clients as well.
So is there only four? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, only four.
Only four mistakes?
Probably okay. Like 20.
How about the top four? Yeah.
Yeah, top four.
And then we'll follow that up with a pretty cool discussion about AI, artificial intelligence, and how it's impacting the world of investing and the world of business. And it's a big deal. It really is. And it's so big that no one really truly knows how it's going to impact in the future. If kind of think back to the internet, there's just no way to understand how it was going to be integrated. And AI is the same way. So that'll be a really, really good topic. So by the way, I'm John Travis. I have an MBA in finance. I'm also a Dave Ramsey certified coach with over 32 years of experience in planning for both corporations and individuals.
And I'm Ryan Borders. I'm a certified financial planner and a Dave Ramsey SmartVestor Pro.
Yeah, we're excited to have you listening to us today on the weekly show where we put the podcast up every Friday morning. You can go to our website, moneymd.net. Obviously, download it to iTunes. We have a lot of folks that are listening through different apps and just kind of on their own leisure. I had someone tell me they were driving across the country and they listened to about 3 hours of MoneyMD podcast.
So, man.
Yeah.
Super fan.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. He said he had to get a monster drink. I'm like, was that because it was not that interesting? But he said he listened to a couple hours.
Send him some merch.
That's right. That's right. So check out our website, moneymd.net. We have some information out there that's useful, some budgeting tools, some other videos out there as well. And, you know, give us a call here at Richard Young Associates if you ever need any help or have questions. And so we're going to start off the show today with the financial fact of the week. And it has to do with really the AI, artificial intelligence market. And so I saw a stat recently. It was pretty interesting. The smartphone market, Samsung and obviously Apple, is about $1.5 trillion. Mm. And again, you know, smartphones have been around for a while, but, you know, within the last couple of decades, electric cars, the market is about $2.5 trillion, so almost twice as big as the smartphone market. And that's still growing as well. That's obviously got a lot of growth potential. And a lot of folks think that this AI, and again, it's hard to define AI, is going to dwarf these numbers as it's going to be used by most industries. And also, it's going to impact most people in medical and day-to-day operations. I mean, we see, I've heard about college students not having to write papers anymore because you just go to chat GPT and it writes you a paper and songs are being written. And
yikes.
It's just, yeah, it is. I mean, there's some negative things to AI potentially as well. Anyway, the market size, it's hard to fathom. So from an investment standpoint, it's exciting because the productivity of companies is going to improve because of AI. And also new products and materials and so forth. So it's hard to wrap your mind around how big AI is going to be. But we'll talk about that a little bit more in the last segment of the show. But we're going to switch gears here and we're going to talk about the four mistakes couples make when they discuss money.
Yeah, we'll revert back to humans and human intelligence, and then we'll move to the whatever you call it, not technology. Species, technology. Yep. Yep. Yeah. So this is an interesting article we found on the New York Times. John, it's 4 mistakes couples make when discussing money. And so this is going to have therapists kind of sharing some secrets to kind of having, how do you have a drama-free money chat? And we have experience just with that with clients and know that money becomes very tense in relationships and sometimes is the number one issue that people experience. So mm-hmm. we're going to talk through that. So the author or reporter says here that she likes talking to her husband about a lot of things, but money isn't one of them. Interesting. So she says most of their conversations about spending go something like this. We lament our credit card balances. We grumble about childcare costs. Then we retreat until the next bill arrives or tax season shines a bright and unsparing light on our finances. So she doesn't like talking about it. It's kind of just, it's always negative, sounds like. And just experiencing that with clients and friends, that's pretty much what I hear all the time. So she takes some comfort in knowing that, you know, she's not the only ones that stink at discussing money. In one small study, married couples reported their money-related disagreements tended to be more intense than arguments about other topics and were less likely to be resolved. Other research suggests that financial conflicts may be a stronger predictor of divorce than any other type of disagreement.
Hmm.
That's huge.
Yeah, it is.
Yep. So this comes from Jillian Knight, a licensed marriage and family therapist. She specializes mainly in financial therapy. She says it's really hard to feel comfortable starting these conversations. So it's just a very hard thing. For some reason, a lot of people have a lot of barriers. And because a lot of time people have the belief that you shouldn't talk about money or that they're not good with money. So it's a very tricky topic for people.
Yeah. So Miss Knight, who's the family therapist, has 4 mistakes that we're going to kind of dive into. And mistake number one is assuming that you have the same values. And we, you know, we tend to internalize financial lessons from our families. You know, when we've grown up as kids, what we are used to hearing and seeing. And a lot of times those are different. And conflicts arise when partners assume that their point of view is the only point of view instead of taking time to explore, you know, the other financial stories and experiences. So this sometimes leads to very, very difficult fights, arguing over whose perspective is the right one. And we see that people come in and they're like, you know, I think this one and my spouse thinks this way, or which one's right? And so puts us in a difficult position sometimes. We have to talk through that. And there is a lot of times a preferred way, but, you know, there's also can be a middle ground.
I mean, it's rare that we ever have people come in, they're both on the exact same page.
Yeah,
there's typically always some differences. And so that's one reason it's nice to have an advisor to bring someone into the middle and say, hey, let's find common ground here. So to better understand where your partner is coming from, start with a broad question like, what money lessons did you learn growing up? So this is recommended by another marriage therapist out of Houston. For instance, if your parents lost his or her job several times, you might have grown up believing that saving money is the ultimate priority, which is understandable. Or you might have come to think that it's important to say yes to all of the experiences and luxuries you didn't have as a child. So you got to think about that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So great conversation starter to kind of get a foundation of where you're at. Mistake number two is not checking in, which is not just money issues. That's in every aspect of marriage, especially once you have kids and get busy with life. Often one partner in a relationship becomes the default money manager, which we see that all the time here.
Mm-hmm.
While that works for many couples, you know, most partners should understand at least a few basics. Okay, so how much money is coming in? How much money is going out? So finance 101 there.
Yeah, AKA a budget.
Yeah, a budget. Yeah. Where is the money and how can I access it if necessary?
Yeah.
Also important. And what are our big financial goals?
Yeah, so I mean, to do that, I mean, it really a recommendation is to schedule regular sit downs or money meetings to briefly check in on how things are going and prepare for any big, you know, decisions or expenditures coming up. I'll say, you know, the Dave Ramsey curriculum, the Financial Peace University, is a good coursework to go through because it gets couples talking and getting on the same page. So. A key is not to attempt to discuss everything about your finances in one session. It can be overwhelming. Instead, make, you know, financial communication a regular part of your relationship. Maybe it's a date night to talk about finances. You know, fine. Maybe it's once a month. Something like that. You can do once a week, but you know, maybe the person that doesn't like to talk about it, that's too frequently. So just schedule the times. Try to make sure you're both relatively relaxed and rested when you go into that. So if not, sometimes the feelings can come out. So mistake number three is letting difficult conversations fizzle. So because financial conversations can escalate into arguments, couples sometimes drop the subject to decompress, which can be wise. I mean, there's nothing wrong with, you know, trying to decompress and get away from that difficult situation for a period of time. But instead of intentionally returning to that topic, perhaps a debate about spending versus saving, later they ignore it until the issue comes up again. And it becomes kind of a cycle and a circle that couples get stuck in. So it's essential that you loop back afterwards, maybe within a day or two, and try to figure out those disagreements, if you can get them resolved, and reduce the tension associated with it. But don't just ignore it, because it is going to come up again.
Yeah, absolutely, one way or another. So when you reconvene, try not to simply repeat what you were saying before. Start by noting something you appreciate about how your partner deals with money, even if it's just acknowledging that he or she pays certain bills on time. So being positive, positive reinforcement helps in a lot of ways.
Yep.
All right, final mistake, number four, focusing only on scarcity. So this is Megan McCoy, an assistant professor in personal financial planning department at Kansas State. Did not downplay the financial stresses that many couples face. So sometimes there just isn't enough money, and no amount of verbal jiu-jitsu can alleviate, you know, the strain that puts on the relationship. But when possible, she thinks couples should inject some playfulness into their financial conversation, which is good. We don't want to just be negative all the time.
Yep.
So, for example, twice a year, her and her husband buy a Powerball ticket and spend a date night talking about what they would do if they won. That's super fun, actually. Obviously, your odds of winning that is so low, but it's still a fun way to kind of get the conversation going. So, you know, one thing they do is they say, hey, what would they spend more time doing if they won? What would they travel more? Would they pay someone to take certain chores around the house? Perhaps then they might start saving more for vacation, or having a conversation about redistributing the domestic load to feel more equal. Mm. So it's just a great way to say, hey, if we won all this money, what would we do? And it just kind of gets you thinking more positively.
Yeah, dreaming a little bit.
Yeah, rather than being like, well, you know, we don't have enough, we don't have this, because that's what we see so much. So she says, I really do think it's a huge mistake to only talk about scarcity, where you should, you know, cut, you know, because it's just negative talk, and no one wants to do that. And so you need to have positive conversation about it, because it is a positive thing. So I just thought this was a good article, John, four mistakes. It's just the main thing is, the theme of it is communicate. Talk.
It is. And if you need help in that area, there are resources. I mean, obviously advisors can help, you know, with those discussion. Dave Ramsey has certified counselors, which I happen to be one, but there's some other folks in the CSRA that, and around the country for that matter, that do deep dives into budgets. And so we refer folks out to them that need some deep dives and 3 to 6 months of help. And that's a great resource. The Dave Ramsey FPU class is the other one that we've both taught those, you know, throughout the years. And it's a 7-week course. You'll walk out of that with a PhD. You know, it's a financial course, but I heard Dave talk about this many years ago. It's as much a relationship course as it is a financial course, because it gets the couple on the same page, you know, understanding the direction and the goals and so forth. So it's a phenomenal, it's phenomenal material.
And let me say this, I'm a financial advisor for a living, and it could be really easy in my own marriage to be like, hey, I'll just take care of it. Sarah defaults to me the majority of the time on the financial side. We still meet with a financial advisor once a year, just so we make sure we are talking on the same page. We meet with Matthew once a year, even though I can do all that.
Yep.
It's just a way to have conversation, to make sure we're on the same page, make sure I'm just not, you know, taking over.
Yep.
and we do it, and that's it's really great. Good for us.
No, so. That's good, because so you're in the weeds, and so having a, another perspective is great. That's great. I'm impressed with that, Ryan. Very, very good. Thumbs up.
Thanks, John.
Good, good, good article. So we're going to switch gears here to the question of the week.
Yeah, so what's the difference between whole life and term insurance? Oh, yes.
Yeah, we get that quite a bit. So just to answer the term insurance, it's for a specific period of time, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 30 years. And the belief behind term insurance, who Dave Ramsey is a big proponent of, and quite frankly, we are too, is it protects your income. So when you get into retirement, if you have saved throughout your career, or even, you know, for the last 20 years of your career, you can be self-insured. So, you know, the term insurance is much cheaper. It's less expensive. By a 20-year term, it protects you during that period of time, and then it goes away, basically. So it's protected you in a critical time. Maybe your kids are young, having your mortgage paid off, things like that. And the whole life is typically referred to as permanent insurance. And there's two pieces to that. There's an insurance piece, and then there's a savings piece. And what we see typically is those two together are inefficient, and it's more efficient to break them apart and do term insurance and then save in a Roth IRA or some combination correct. Of that. So there's different uses of whole life insurance, and some of them may be appropriate, but term insurance, inexpensive for a specific amount of time. It generally works exceptionally well for what it's designed to do. So I don't know if you have any adds to that.
Yeah, you just got to be careful, because a lot of times the sales pitch can be really enticing, but you just got to really break down the numbers and sit down with someone to make sure you understand exactly what you're signing up for, just so you're not caught off guard and stuck in something you don't want to be in.
Yeah, very good. All right, so the last discussion topic here is separating AI, artificial intelligence hype, from investment opportunity. It's a really good article out of Capital Funds. Three individuals contributed to this. One of them is an economist. The other two are portfolio managers, Mark Casey, Peter Elliott, and Jared Frantz. This is back in April of this year. And so, Ryan, I mean, we see the artificial intelligence hype cycle. It's really kicked into overdrive. I mean, new news feeds bring daily reports of AI's promise to accelerate medical and scientific discovery and drive, you know, leaps into productivity and maybe redeploy jobs on a mass scale. So businesses and individuals have rushed to adopt AI tools. So there's something called OpenAI. It's the developer of ChatGPT, which is a tool that people are using. And matter of fact, there's 100 million weekly users of that ChatGPT, including 2 million developers out in the world using that to develop language and processes. And 92% of Fortune 500 companies are using ChatGPT. So it's being incorporated and very, very quickly. And that's a lot of people using that tool. And investor excitement has certainly turbocharged some of the prices of the most visible enablers of AI, and some of the performances are off the chart because people are flocking to their stocks, and they're pretty expensive at this point, but they've had a nice run. And so the question for investors is, has AI, which is defined as platforms and tools that can generate new content, including text, images, video, and sound, can it launch a lasting megatrend, or has its potential been greatly exaggerated? So in general, this group, and we would agree with and believe that AI represents a transformational shift that will lead to unprecedented investment opportunities. And the challenge for investors today is really to separate that hype from what matters, and that's the pace of adoption. How quickly is it being integrated into our society? Improvements in what they're developing, and also price-related declines and productivity associated with that.
Yeah, and it's definitely taken over as the big buzzword. You know, crypto for the last couple of years on our end was the buzzword, the thing. Now it's people asking about AI. So the first is, hey, you know, the AI market may be bigger than you think. With AI still in its infancy, it's difficult to estimate how large the market will be. The consulting firm McKinsey estimates that AI market could reach $13 trillion by 2030, which is huge. With PricewaterhouseCoopers assesses it could be $15.7 trillion by 2030. huge. Meanwhile, yeah. Goldman Sachs has estimated that it could boost GDP by 7%.
Wow, that's amazing.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah.
And I have some thoughts on that in a sec. We believe the ultimate addressable market for AI is the hardest of any we've tried to size, this group says. After all, what the value of better intelligence or having more knowledge about everything Simply put, AI has open-ended potential to generate a market many multiples larger than those of previous technological advances. There's a lot of hype around the computer when it first came that, hey, the work week's going to get smaller because we're going to be way more efficient, and actually we'll wind up working more and we're just putting out more.
Yeah.
And there's been talk in the news about that with AI. That's something really interesting. Oh, people will work less.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah, no, it's more productive.
Exactly. I mean,
that's just increasing productivity, which falls to the bottom line. So it's interesting. When the smartphone was popularized about 15 years ago, it combined the internet and mobile phone technology, and few could have predicted it would lead to new app-based businesses like Uber or DoorDash. And the breakthroughs in AI represent similar potential. What's more, this AI can analyze vast amounts of information and use pattern recognition to teach itself new tasks. So this unlocks the potential to solve complex problems, really uncover new insights, and potentially lead to the creation of new business models. There's no doubt that's going to happen. I mean, there's going to be technologies that we're using in 10 years that weren't even thought about today. Yeah. So four ways that early adopters are using AI. Companies are still, in the experimental phase of AI. And some of the IT consulting businesses, such as Accenture, have launched an initiative to help clients identify cases for using AI and integrating it into their organization. So businesses are already seeking to tap into the efficiency and productivity gains that AI can deliver. So as much as 30% of hours worked in the U.S. could be automated by 2030, according to the McKinsey study. So to your point, 30% of hours, you're not going to work less. You're going to still probably work the same, but you're going to be able to push out more productivity. I know it's going to impact our industry as well to the good. I mean, there's going to, some of the manual tasks that we do will be automated. So here are a few ways that companies are integrating AI into their businesses. And the first one that you hear a lot about is scientific and medical discovery. And so AI is likely going to accelerate the discovery across various disciplines. It can potentially process the totality of all known mathematics or physics or medicine in a very short time. So for example, a biopharma company, Regeneron, is harnessing AI tools to scour its massive database at its genetic centers to identify disease targets, understand disease progression, develop drug therapies, and track how individuals respond to treatment. So it's going in and it's harnessing all this data that has been collected in various systems, and it's analyzing it in a very quick time.
That's wild, by the way. What we're talking about is
wild. It's game changing. I mean,
yeah, that's what I'm most excited about, the healthcare side.
Yep.
Getting, a lot of work on some of these big diseases. Number two is product development. So consumer product giant Procter & Gamble has begun using Gen AI to improve molecular discovery, enabling it to develop, for example, 100 fragrance options at a time rather than one. As a result, they can respond to new product trends within months instead of years.
Yeah.
Among consumer tech offerings, Meta has developed, that's formerly Facebook, has developed AI sunglasses equipped with cameras to see what the wearer sees and microphones to hear what the wearer hears. The glasses enable users to take and share photos and videos and listen to music. Users can also ask questions of the glasses like, what meals can I make with the ingredients on the table? Goodness gracious. Or who is the architect of the church I'm looking at? Do we want all this? That's the big question.
Yeah, anyway, no, I tell you, I mean, that's not a bad question. I mean, simplicity, goodness, it's hard to find simplicity now, like just in life.
My friends and I were sitting around just hanging out one weekend. We said, hey, when we ask a question, we just Google now. But back in the day, our grandparents would have to think through it and problem solve.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
You didn't have an answer, but anyway.
You probably don't know this, but there used to be paper maps. You had to open them up and draw your route out.
I actually printed out MapQuest back in high school.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, I didn't quite have an iPhone then, so I'm a little older than you think.
This is Rand McNally.
I know I look good, but I'm a little, I'm older than you think.
Yeah, you're still young, buddy. You're still young. So the third thing people are using is industrial automation and robotics. Amazon, which has long used industrial robots in its fulfillment centers, is applying AI to improve efficiency and functionality. And what's more, robotics company Figure has harnessed this ChatGPT to create a humanoid robot with audio and video inputs that can converse and work alongside humans. So it's amazing what's happening. Schneider Electric is developing a generative AI tool to communicate with customers about their carbon emissions. Construction and mining equipment manufacturer Caterpillar is investing in AI to boost productivity of its autonomous machine. So it's being, I mean, we're just at the beginning stages of this. I mean, these are very basic things that are being done that, again, in 2 years, in 5 years, it's going to be exponentially
absolutely
more productive.
It's going to be huge. Yeah. Number four, IT services. So companies were already shifting several of their IT needs to cloud and outsourcing more of their tech support. The trend is being amplified by proliferation of Gen AI, which has spawned a host of smaller companies that offer large enterprises consulting and IT services that can evaluate and score the quality of content being created through the AI process, which can generate false or misleading information known as hallucinations? Other companies have been using Gen AI to support call centers, improve financial models, create marketing, and advertising content, analyze legal contracts, and develop employee training materials. So they're doing a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
Tons of stuff.
It really is. And so the AI investment opportunities, I mean, it's primarily been in the tech and the media industries, but it's spreading across different industries and organizations. Businesses worldwide invested an estimated $19 billion in 2023 to integrate AI into their processes. That's according to the Wall Street Journal report. And while many are in the experimental phase, AI has the potential to create massive productivity gains, reduce the cost for companies, and generate insights that provide a competitive edge for early adopters. Now, again, from an investment standpoint, a lot of it falls to the bottom line, which increases profits, which is exciting. And the new products, I agree with you. I think the medical, to me, is the most exciting. A unique U.S. Census data set released in March shows that AI adoption at 5% in the U.S. firms, but expected to increase by 50% in 2024. And that suggests that we are still in the early stages of adoption. And while the headlines may talk of mass unemployment and job loss, 95% of AI adopting firms report no job loss and 65% reported no task loss, which just means people are doing other things and able to crank out more work. So other data in the report shows that firms that enable AI exposed to consulting, training, and cloud could benefit from the transition. So certainly wider adoption is fueling continuous improvements that build upon each other, setting in a motion of a cycle of innovation and adoption. And as more enterprises use AI, new and more sophisticated uses will likely emerge. So you know, rather than focusing on attention-grabbing headlines about massive job loss or concerns about the coming of robots, investors should really focus on the declining cost of AI adoption, advancements in models, identifying early adopters that may use technology to gain a competitive advantage. And it really is exciting. I've heard it compared to the Industrial Revolution. It's that big. And so it is exciting. Obviously there's some negativity to it, downsides if it's used incorrectly, but, I'm going to focus on the positive. I'm an optimistic person.
I think
there's going to be some really cool in business. It's going to be really cool, but I think in the medical, I think it's just going to be amazing, and it's already happening. It's in the process right now.
You start diving in the weeds of this thing, it gets wild. What might be? So it's interesting stuff.
Yep, I agree. So we're going to close out the show here with the prescription of the week.
All right, back to human talk. It is vacation time, John, for a lot of people.
Yep.
So one thing we just want to remind everybody is make sure you budget for your vacations. So, now that we're in the spring, heading into the summer, make sure you have a budget in place for when you're on vacation, because it's easy to forget about the budget when booking a trip or while you're even on your trip. So you want to be mindful of your spending and have a plan because you can go on vacation, man, and you can blow it. And you can be like, get back and be like, oh no, what do we do?
Yeah.
Which we want you to enjoy it. But just make sure you have a plan. Make sure you have barriers. Make sure you just don't, come back and get yourself in a hole that kind of screws up the rest of your year.
Yeah.
So that's the main thing is, hey, make sure you have a budget for the vacation and while you're on the vacation.
Good. Love it. Love it. So this has been this week's edition of Money MD. Tune in next week on MoneyMD.net to hear more prescriptions for your financial health. Check out our website, MoneyMD.net. Send us your questions and give us a call here at Richard Young Associates at 706-739-0725. Thanks for listening. Hope you have a great weekend.
Material in this program is intended for general information only and should not be taken as specific investment, tax, or legal advice. None of the information contained in this broadcast is intended by the host to be a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any security. All hosts are representatives of Richard Young Associates, a registered investment advisor.